This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Locating, tracking, and finally killing Osama bin Laden took months of planning and intelligence work, nearly 10 years after the attacks on 9/11. The operation, a secret mission coordinated between the CIA and military special forces, reflects an ongoing shift in the role of U.S. military and intelligence agencies on the battlefield. The shift has been embraced by some leaders at the Pentagon and by some on Capitol Hill. This hour, we focus on what bin Laden's death may mean for U.S. foreign and defense policy and for politics. NPR commentator Ted Koppel is with us from his home in Maryland. And joining us now from his home is retired General Colin Powell, Secretary of State during the second term for President George W. Bush. And Secretary Powell, good of you to be with us today.
Well, thank you very much, Neil. Ted, how are you?
Good. Thank you. It's always good to hear you.
Yeah.
And let me ask you, as General Powell, just for a moment, to put your military hat on, and tell us what you think of this operation. What kind of effort does it need to be mounted, and the kind of secrecy that needs to be preserved, particularly in terms of this case, the host country, Pakistan?
Well, it takes an extraordinary level of coordination, as you can imagine, and it all starts with the intelligence picture. Do you have enough intelligence to be sure that when you launch an operation like this, the target you're looking for will be there? There's always some risk that the target will not be there, but do you have enough to give you reasonable assurance it'll work? And then you have to have the closest coordination between the people developing the intelligence and the troops that are actually going to execute the mission. And this is not something new, Neil, as you mentioned earlier. We've been doing things like this for many years. My own personal experience was the night we invaded Panama in 1989, we had to go into a compound and rescue a CIA agent who had been captured by Mr. Noriega, General Noriega at that time, and we got him out safely before the invasion actually started. And so this takes a high level of cooperation between the two sides, intelligence and military. To your second point, the perhaps next most important thing is you've got to keep it secret. You must have operational security. And that is not only between us and, say, the Pakistanis in this case, but just within the government. It has to be kept in a very, very tight compartment because the slightest leak will blow the whole operation and probably make it impossible to perform. And in this case, they did a beautiful job, and I have absolutely no concerns or complaints about the fact that they didn't see fit to notify the Pakistanis beforehand.
Ted?
General Powell, in a sense, this offers the president a political opportunity, and I hope it's not premature to be talking about that, but, you know, the next presidential campaign is more or less underway already. It offers him an opportunity in the sense that there is a way of declaring now, you know, we did what we set out to do. It's time to begin coming home. A, do you think he will? And B, do you think he should?
Well, I think it does give him an opportunity. This will certainly improve his standing in the country. And all of these stories that you've been reading about, he leads from behind and things like that, I think will have diminished currency as we move forward. He did a terrific job as commander-in-chief in this instance. Now, with respect to your question, he has already said that we're planning to withdraw from Iraq by the end of the year, which was a plan originally put in place during the Bush administration. And so far, he hasn't said anything to change that policy, although there are some in the Pentagon, Mr. Gates, for example, who has said to the Iraqis, if you think there's a need for residual force, you'd better tell us, because we're coming out by the end of the year. And we'll have to leave behind a rather significant State Department presence in order to perform some of the training assistance functions and other things that need to be done. So I think the president, before the year is out, will have to make a judgment as to whether the pullout will be complete as advertised, whether there is a need for some kind of residual force, and will the Iraqis ask for it and want it. With respect to
Afghanistan,
he's also taken a position that the surge, which went in the beginning of last year, is supposed to be reviewed in July, and he indicated at the time he announced the surge that he would make some drawdowns. The question really is it going to be a large drawdown or a small drawdown? And that's something he will have to decide after consultations with General Petraeus and President Karzai and a lot of other people. But I think a drawdown will be appropriate. I don't think we can stay there at that level of troop density for simply the indefinite period. And I think there's some dissatisfaction within the United States over the performance of the Karzai government. And so we will see how the president resolves these two questions that will be put before him before the year is up.
Another question.
You and I were talking a little bit earlier, General Powell, and you said to me, as you travel around the country, you get a real sense from the various groups that you speak to that the appetite for pulling out of Afghanistan is getting more and more acute.
I think there is a greater appetite for it, but Americans have been willing to sacrifice. But what they're seeing now is, my goodness, we have such problems here at home. We have infrastructure needs. We have education needs. We have energy problems. We have a political system that is in some disarray, as seen from my trips around the country. And so they're anxious to start focusing as much attention here at home as we perhaps have been focusing on these overseas conflicts that we are involved in. And then the big thing that overhangs all of this is the deficit and the national debt. These things are not cheap, plus the loss of life.
As you now ask you to put your Secretary of State hat on for just a moment, and you have a supposedly close U.S. ally who may or may not have known that Osama bin Laden was living in a compound 35 miles from their capital, was not told of a U.S. operation or U.S. suspicions of that, which existed for months, and not told of U.S. operation to mount a special operations raid deep inside their country. This is a country with which we have had deteriorating relations, including the Davis affair just a couple of months ago, which nearly escalated beyond the flashpoint, finally resolved when the U.S. paid blood money to have him extricated out of there. Where does the U.S. go with Pakistan?
Well, whatever irritation they may feel over this lack of foreknowledge of what we were going to do, I think they'll get over it. They no longer have to worry about Osama bin Laden. The more interesting question, which I'm sure everybody will be chattering about, is how could somebody build a compound like this in a place such as this, which is not isolated, and people in government positions and the military drive by it all the time and not express any particular curiosity about these 12-foot walls and what's actually going on behind there. But the fact of not being informed beforehand, I can assure you the Pakistani military leaders will, as professional soldiers, will understand the need for the operational security of that operation.
Yet. We already started chattering about the compound, General, but I think the question is not just how the Pakistani leadership and how the Pakistani military will respond. You know, somehow we managed to smooth out all the rough edges in our relationship when we have to. I think the larger question is how the Pakistani public, which is already overwhelmingly anti-American, is going to respond.
Well, I don't think they had any great love for Osama bin Laden. I mean, the real challenge over there now is the Taliban, both the Taliban in Afghanistan and the Pakistani Taliban. And it was not Osama bin Laden who had operational control over them. As I read the press reports this morning, he had no telephone or wireless communications in that compound. Very wise, because if he had, we would have found it long ago. But that also means he is not any longer in a position of operational command. He was an inspirational leader, and he was the name everybody attached to the subject of terrorism, and now he's gone. So that inspirational figure is gone, but terrorism isn't gone, and you still have the Taliban to deal with, and you have franchise operations of al-Qaeda who will not sit quietly. So there is still danger, but at least this inspirational figurehead of the terrorist movement will not be around, and he will not be coming out every 6 months with a videotape.
As you look around, though, the Middle East and see enormous changes underway in Tunisia and in Egypt, popular uprisings in Libya and in Syria, Yemen as well, and other places too, I wonder, as you look at people who are now finding avenues to express their political dissatisfaction, is bin Ladenism suffering a blow, even as its inspiration, as you just said, is dead?
It's not clear it had that much influence in those parts of the world in the first place, but it certainly is suffering a blow if it did. And the people who are demanding reform are not fundamentalists, principally, who are demanding reform in some name of radical Islamism. They're demanding reform because they don't have jobs, because they don't see the wealth of the nation being shared with the people of the nation. They see corrupt governments. They wonder, gee, why can't we have representative government? This is a wave that has been sweeping across the world for about 30 years, and I always like to link it back to something you guys will remember, the Helsinki Final Act of 1975, which essentially got the Soviets to acknowledge that representative government is something we all should expect and want. And within 10 or 15 years of that, it was happening in Europe along the Iron Curtain, and then the Soviet Union collapsed, the Iron Curtain collapsed, and that wave continues to sweep across the world. People want to be represented by folks that they elected, and it's now happening in Tunisia, and it's happening in lots of other places. The most serious one, of course, is Libya, where he will not yield easily, but I think the pressure on Gaddafi will eventually produce a result, but it's going to be ugly. And in Egypt, we're not quite sure where that is going, but the views of the people are going to be taken into account. And it won't always be in our favor. Some of the things that we see happening in Egypt now, I suspect my colleagues in the administration are a little uneasy about. But, you know, that's where we are when people are allowed to speak freely and ask that they are the ones who select their government and not a king. I also remind
you, General,
that there can be there's some history to this. I mean, last week we celebrated the wedding of the prince. It's still called the United Kingdom. It's the Kingdom of Denmark, the Kingdom of Spain, the Kingdom of Norway, Kingdom of Sweden. So you can transition from these authoritarian regimes into a representative form of government without losing the historical connection to a supreme commander of the organization of the country.
Secretary Powell, thank you so much for your time today.
Quite welcome, sir.
Bye. Retired General Colin Powell with us from his home in Maryland. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Stay with us. This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today we are listening to reverberations from the death of Osama bin Laden. Reaction among Washington leaders and former leaders with Swift, former President George W. Bush. This momentous achievement marks a victory for America, for people who seek peace around the world, and for all those who lost loved ones on September the 11th, 2001. The fight against terror goes on, but tonight America has sent an unmistakable message. No matter how long it takes, justice will be done. Speaker of the House John Boehner, this is great news for the security of the American people and a victory in our continued fight against al-Qaeda and radical extremism around the world. I want to congratulate and thank the hardworking men and women of our armed forces and intelligence community for their tireless efforts and perseverance that led to this success. I also want to commend President Obama and his team, as well as President Bush, for all their efforts to bring Osama bin Laden to justice. And Republican Congressman Peter King on NBC's Today program.
Let me give the President Obama, tremendous credit for this. He was the commander-in-chief. He's the one who authorized this operation. This whole situation began under President Bush. It was continued and now carried to a conclusion, very successful conclusion, by President Obama, and he deserves full credit.
NPR commentator Ted Koppel is with us, and let's bring another voice into the conversation, Bob Woodward, associate editor at The Washington Post, who's written extensively on the inner workings of the White House and national security operations, author of the book Obama's Wars, and he joins us now on the phone from his home in Washington. And Bob Woodward, nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
And are you surprised that after the United States began to consider that Osama bin Laden might have been found in this mansion 35 miles from Islamabad in August, that it's been quiet all that time?
It's a great secret that they kept, and it shows patience, and it shows a caution. As we know in the intelligence world, it's like weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. You think you have the intelligence, and it turns out to be wrong. So there was a careful weighing of this on one hand, and on the other hand, by watching that compound for 8 months, they were able to exploit it for intelligence purposes in terms of what was bin Laden's role in communicating to other people. Is he in on plans for other operations? Who are the other key people? So I'm sure in that 8 months they learned a great deal.
We all remember the example of what happened at Desert One and the attempted rescue of Iranian hostages under President Carter. This could have turned out very differently. In retrospect, it all seems brilliant. On the other hand, this had to have been a gut-wrenching moment in the White House.
Well, yes. And what they did is they practiced. And if you go back to Desert One, the attempted rescue of U.S. hostages held in Iran in, what was it, 1979, quite a long while ago, they had elements of the various military services, the Air Force and the Navy and the Army, and they had never practiced, never worked together, and I think in part that counted for for the calamity. It didn't work, and you remember the pictures of helicopters crashing into each other, and I think 8 people were killed.
Ted?
Well, I was just going to ask Bob to respond to something I asked Secretary Powell about, and that is this issue of we really do have a much more proactive CIA these days than I remember from 20 or 30 years ago. And this notion that the CIA is kind of a paramilitary organization, now with David Petraeus coming in as the new director of the CIA, what do you think that says for the operation of the CIA in concert with special operations forces in the months and years to come, Bob?
Well, I think there will be more secret operations like this. As I have reported, Petraeus has told Obama in his role as central commander, the commander in Afghanistan, in terms of the military, said, we're not self-employed. In other words, we do what you say. And I think that's true. The military is not, they don't decide on their own operations. This is something Obama, going back 18 months, part of the top secret decisions when he ordered 30,000 new troops to Afghanistan was that the safe havens in Pakistan for al-Qaeda and the Taliban were no longer acceptable. And so he followed through with a series of top-secret orders saying, we're going to do something about this, and in fact, we're going to try to get the Pakistanis to go along with it. But if they don't, we're proceeding on our own. And as he said in one of these secret meetings, the poison is in Pakistan, and they've at least found part of it over the weekend.
Let's bring another voice into the conversation. NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving with us here in Studio 3A. And Ron Elving, interesting to hear General Powell say a few minutes ago that this provides the president a little breathing room before General Petraeus leaves Afghanistan and arrives at the Central Intelligence Agency. He's going to give the president a recommendation on the number of forces to be withdrawn in July of this summer, and it will be interesting to see how the president responds to that, and indeed what General Petraeus will recommend.
And I believe we will also see a number of people raising their hands to be heard on this particular issue. This is something which has divided Democrats. It has divided others as well. But this is an issue that the president's own party has struggled with. Many people were appalled that after a careful review of the Afghan policy in the fall of 2009, the president decided to escalate that war. They thought that he would be as interested in getting out of Afghanistan as he was in Iraq. Perhaps they hadn't carefully read some of the speeches that the president had given when he was a candidate for president in 2007, when he outlined the differences between how he saw Iraq and Afghanistan. But nonetheless, they objected and have objected, as that war has looked increasingly like a quagmire to many. So many will say, at this point, with Obama looking at a situation where we have an entirely different emotional moment, if you will, with regard to the Taliban and al-Qaeda, because bin Laden is dead, this is the time to begin a more rapid pullout from Afghanistan.
Would those voices include that of the Vice President, Joe Biden?
Well, Joe Biden was known to have his problems with the Afghan surge. The escalation that was decided upon in the fall of 2009 was quite vocal about it internally. And the Vice President is an active voice in our foreign policy. And that would be a real challenge to him at this point in terms of his loyalty, although he has fallen into line with the policy since he was overruled back at that point. And as Secretary Powell said, if you are looking for an opportunity to make a drawdown that's perhaps at the more dramatic end of the range of his choices, his options, this is the moment when you have the review in July, when you are making this change, dramatic change in your security team. It's considered a cautious change, a safe change, if you will, a kind of conservative on the strength side change in his national security team, bringing in the general at CIA, moving Leon Panetta over to DOD. This is a good time for the president to say, we're on top of the war on terror, and we can draw down our forces in Afghanistan, if that is what he wants to do.
Neil, can I jump in just for a moment to raise the caution flag here? What we still have in Pakistan is a weak civilian government, over 100 nuclear warheads, a very active local Taliban and other fundamentalist Islamic groups, and very, very strong anti-American feelings, and one of the most stressful relationships between Islamabad and Washington that has existed in quite a few years. It may not, I mean, as they take a look at the situation as it exists right now, the president and his advisors may very well come to the conclusion that much as he would like to pull troops out of there, it isn't yet time.
And Bob Woodward, let me ask you, we've heard reports just in the past couple of weeks of the Pakistanis advising their neighbors in Kabul that President Karzai might want to look to his east, to Pakistan, to his north, to China, and recognize that Washington, D.C. is a very long way away and American troops are going to start going home.
Well, that's right. And to add what Ted was saying about Pakistan, I have my Google map here, and it shows where they found bin Laden in, what's it called, Abbottabad.
Abbottabad, yeah.
Which is 35 miles north of Islamabad. Then you go over about 15 or 20 miles to Tarbella, which is where the Pakistanis store their nuclear weapons. And you kind of say, now, wait a minute, and the history shows that whenever somebody was stirring in that area, the Pakistani military would move in. Didn't they look 15 miles down the road and ask some questions about this very strange compound? When you walk the cat back, it seems kind of obvious something important and very secret was going on here. So the Pakistanis are going to have to answer the question, at least in private to the United States. We knew, we didn't know, we guessed, we were staying out of that issue, but then that leads you back to the question, which side is Pakistan on? And as we know, they've been on both sides, and this is what has really peeved Obama and Petraeus and Gates, the current Secretary of Defense, and Leon Panetta. I quote Panetta saying, to solve the problem in Pakistan, we have to get boots on the ground. They can be Pakistani boots or United States boots. And you see now they've delivered on that, and they didn't turn to the Pakistanis, but they used U.S. forces for this secret raid, which they did not even signal or give any hint to the Pakistanis that we were crossing the border into their sovereign country and conducting a military operation.
Mara Liasson is with us, NPR's national political correspondent. She's at the White House today. And Mara Liasson, it's fair to say that the commander-in-chief has new stature within Washington, D.C. circles today. And we just heard Bob Woodward mention Leon Panetta, currently the head of the CIA, and tapped to be the next Secretary of Defense.
Yes, there's no doubt this was a huge victory, not just for President Obama, but for the intelligence community. And I just wanted to add one little thing to Ted and Bob's investigation of the Google map. I think just a couple miles down the road was the Pakistani Military Academy, their equivalent of West Point. So talk about it happening right under the noses of the Pakistanis. But yes, this is a tremendous victory for President Obama. He had faced a lot of criticisms of his foreign policy leadership. He actually he took a risk here. That's what leaders do. He didn't bomb the compound, which would have been safer, although he would have had a pile of rubble instead of a body to identify. But he did take a risk. This could have been Desert One or Black Hawk Down. And, you know, the other thing about what happens now and the pressure on him to perhaps withdraw from Afghanistan faster. This is a president who doesn't want to declare mission accomplished, but other people are going to want to declare it for him, not just members of his own party, but also people in Pakistan who are saying, okay, you got him, now get out.
And as they face that prospect in Washington, D.C., Mara, there is going to be an interesting division. It is those in the president's own party who are going to be urging him to declare victory and leave.
Yes, although I do think that the what he achieved and the increase in stature that he gets from being the president who got Osama bin Laden will help him tamp down those criticisms from his own party pretty quickly. I think the question is how much of a boost does he get? How long does it last? He was able to stress the theme of unity last night, asking people to think back to how we were unified after 9/11. He's gotten bipartisan praise. I never thought I'd wake up and see a headline, Cheney congratulates Obama, but we did see that. So it allows him to get back to his signature theme. He is going into a series of very tough budget negotiations on the debt ceiling with the Republicans. Will this help him domestically as well on foreign policy? We'll see. It certainly will give him a boost. I don't know how long it lasts.
Bob Woodward, as you look at the situation and you've been following these the White House and its interests in Afghanistan and in Pakistan and in Iraq for many years now, are you seeing, well, clearly it's beyond the end of the beginning and the beginning of the end in Iraq. Are we on the downslope in Afghanistan?
Well, we're going to see, and I think we, you know, as General Petraeus used to say, let's not get all the champagne out of the refrigerator yet, simply because there may be an al-Qaeda response to this, and there's a lot of intelligence that the al-Qaeda senior leadership, like the late Osama bin Laden, had kind of distanced himself, if not actually halted his participation in the planning of operations, so they could go forward with or without him. So there may be, in the days or weeks that come, some sort of response. And if the response is ugly, if we have something we haven't had yet since 9/11, a terrorist attack in this country, then all of this stature will be called into question, because people will say, wait a minute, they got bin Laden, but they, as the White House under Bush and under Obama have stressed, job one is to protect the United States. That's more important, in fact, and if you look at the statements about getting bin Laden, it was a priority, not the priority. The priority is protecting the country. And if there's some fall down on the job there, the politics of this could shift in a heartbeat.
The title of Bob Woodward's most recent book is Obama's Wars. Ted Koppel, those are about the wars he inherited in Iraq and Afghanistan. The latter he has certainly made his own. There's also the war that he started, the one in Libya. And if that drags on, we can't forget that it was the son of Muammar Gaddafi who was also killed in an airstrike just a couple of days ago.
You actually took the words right out of my mouth. I was just going to raise that. Remember, this is also the president who has said that Muammar Gaddafi cannot be permitted to remain in power over there. And while the United States is still sort of uncomfortably trying to take the position that getting rid of Gaddafi is not the goal of either NATO or of any U.S. forces who may be involved, the fact of the matter is, when the president of the United States stakes his credibility, as George W. Bush discovered when he said, that they had to get bin Laden dead, or, you know, they were going to get bin Laden dead or alive, and it became a constant irritant that this had not happened. That irritant still remains in Tripoli. Muammar Gaddafi is still alive. He is still controlling events in Libya. And while, again, the celebration of what is truly a great day for the United States will continue for a little while. It won't be long before people start raising questions about Gaddafi's survival.
And I was just to bring that up with Ron Elving. It's silence the people saying we're dithering, we're not being active enough, we need to get in there and get this over with. That will not last long before those kinds of criticisms resume.
NATO, for the moment, is taking the lead role. That is the way that President Obama wanted it. He did not want to have this be his third war, although it's very difficult to shake it entirely through the surrogacy of NATO. But it was NATO that made this strike in Tripoli that killed Gaddafi's son and some of his grandchildren. And it is presumably NATO that continues to make these strikes, although I think we all assume that we are closely involved in terms of providing some of the intelligence, and apparently in this case pretty good intelligence, about where Gaddafi might be and where he might be hit.
That is NPR Senior Washington Editor Ron Elving with us here in Studio 3A. Mara Liasson, NPR National Political Correspondent, is at the White House. Bob Woodward at his home here in Washington, D.C. So is NPR commentator Ted Koppel. We're going to ask you all to stay with us. There is scheduled to begin in about 7 minutes' time a briefing at the White House. Jay Carney, the White House press secretary, is expected to hold the daily briefing. It's a matter of considerable interest today. In the unlikely event he starts on time, we will bring some of that to you as he begins. In the meantime, we're going to continue this conversation. If you'd like to join us, give us a call. 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing reaction to the U.S. military operation that killed Osama bin Laden early this morning, Pakistan time. In a few minutes, the daily press briefing at the White House is scheduled to begin. The president is not expected to take the podium again, but we do expect that Jay Carney, the White House press secretary, will be there to talk with reporters and, well, have some of interest to say. If he starts on time, we will go there to the White House. We also hope to get to some of your phone calls. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. If we have to cut away to the White House, apologies in advance. You can also email us talk@npr.org. Ted Koppel is with us, NPR commentator. Also with us is Bob Woodward, associate editor of The Washington Post. His most recent book is Obama's Wars. With us also at the White House, Mara Liasson. She's going to have to cover that press conference, so she's going to have to tuck away. And Ron Elving, NPR senior Washington editor, with us here in Studio 3A. And Mara, as we talk about this, what is the buzz there in the White House press room? How is this event being debated there today? And Mara maybe have left the booth. So we will put that question to the person who's going to be editing her piece for later tonight, Ron Elving.
I think there has to be a tremendous amount of excitement still left over from last night. It was an extraordinary event to have a message come across at 9:48 at night saying that the pool had been brought back to the White House, called back to the White House after hours of dismissal. No one expects that to happen on a Sunday night. And then we got the even more surprising announcement that the president would be coming out. Initially, they said 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. It turned out to be about an hour later. But when they said the president was coming out to make an announcement at 10:30 on a Sunday night, when he had, for all we knew, had a day of golf and perhaps not much more. That was also very carefully hidden. That was really an exciting event, and it set off these wild celebrations in the streets.
Let's get a caller in on the conversation, and Brendan's on the line calling us from Phoenix.
Hi. I hope you guys are all doing great today. I just had a comment. You know, I was watching all the celebrations last night on TV, and while I think it was necessary, you know, and just that we got Osama bin Laden, it did occur to me that maybe we need to sit back and take a look at ourselves and see what we've done in the last number of years, what with going to Iraq and all the people that were killed over there, as well as our soldiers, and, you know, all the terrible things really that we've done in the years that, you know, since September 11th. And it just seems like to me that the country, you know, could have taken a moment to, you know, take a look at ourselves and maybe change some of the ways that we do things, but it doesn't seem like we ever really do that. So I just wanted to make that comment, you know, and unless we take a look at the hard truths of our part in things, then, you know, really nothing is really ever going to change.
It's an interesting point, Brendan. I wanted to ask Bob Woodward about that. The president's speech last night, his demeanor, he did not go out and work the crowd. It was not a moment of triumphalism.
No, it wasn't. In a sense, you have to pull back and ask the question, what does this tell us about Obama? And I think in a very real way, the paradox of Barack Obama continues. He certainly does not like war. When I talked with him last summer about the war in Afghanistan and Pakistan, he said, look, war is managing chaos. It's hell. In his Nobel Prize acceptance speech, he said, war is never glorious, maybe sometimes necessary, but it is a manifestation of human folly. On the other hand, look at the kudos and the praise he is getting for this warlike operation. I mean, it was an extraordinary attack into a sovereign country without notifying them, without having them participate. And, maybe this is the final transformation of Obama into a wartime president. He has not liked it and has resisted it in many ways, but all of the poll numbers are going to go up. It's not like health care where people are going to go public and go to Congress and say, let's repeal it. The Republicans are embracing this as much as Democrats are, and this is the great lesson. Ted Koppel knows this so well, of presidents who have a domestic agenda and then wars come along or difficult foreign policy decisions, and they realize as commander-in-chief running the diplomacy and war machine of the country, they don't have to get a vote or a say from anybody else, and so there is a natural gravitational pull toward those kind of operations and that kind of focus. And maybe we're going to see more of this with Obama. Presidents get reelected, which is very much on his mind next year, when they're tough. And this, makes him come out perhaps even tougher than George Bush.
Ted, what do you think?
It's an ongoing war, and we have to be careful. You can never make a judgment based on just today's news without accepting the value judgment of the caller about what the United States has done and the degree to which we deserve to be criticized for what we've done. The fact of the matter is that those entities that seek to engage the United States in military action can't do it with their Air Force, can't do it with their navies. The United States Air Force, Navy, military, Marines are more powerful than any other military entity in the world. That is why terrorism exists. It is the tool of the vulnerable, the tool of the weak against the powerful, and I think we have to anticipate both in a response from Gaddafi in Libya and in a response of whatever is left of al-Qaeda around the world. We will see a response, we will see a reaction, and obviously the mood on that day is going to be far less celebratory than it is today.
Brendan, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Let's go next to Kathy, and Kathy's on the line from Salt Lake City.
Hi, I'd just like to say I think this is exactly how these wars need to be fought, to surgically remove the leader, like we did Osama bin Laden. Let's go in and surgically remove Gaddafi. These leaders use their people as shields, and if the wars are fought in this way, those guys have huge egos. They don't care about the cause. They just care about their own power. Let's surgically remove each one of them.
Ron Elving, easier said than done in many cases.
You're absolutely right.
Ron?
Yes, that's right. In this particular instance, the president looks like a winner. This was an extraordinary figure. This was someone who essentially stood astride the entire war on terror as the great bête noire. This was the one guy we wanted to get more than anyone else, the number one public enemy. And going after anyone else, and Gaddafi, I think, is even on a somewhat different plane, although clearly the Europeans are ready to take the lead on that one. Going after anyone else in this particular way is going to be much less of a clean win, even if it comes off well.
And it's interesting, Ted Koppel, I think there was some muted congratulations from Pervez Musharraf, the former military dictator in Pakistan, speaking from his current residence in Dubai, saying, glad Osama's gone. This was a violation of Pakistani sovereignty. That may be one of the few voices on that front. Yet you have Russia, a permanent member of the Security Council, bitterly criticizing the decision to bomb young Gaddafi into oblivion and his family in Tripoli.
Well, you've got two actions here that the United States has taken in recent days that are, to put it mildly, controversial. The one action is to appear to be going after the head of a foreign government. Assassination, whether it's done with a bullet to the head or whether it's done with some missile that is fired from a plane overhead, is still assassination. The other half of the equation here is that we have entered the sovereign territory of another nation, albeit one with which we are allied, without prior consultation, without giving them prior notification, and without receiving their permission. Imagine how we would feel if any other country did that to us. I'm not for a moment questioning the president's decision. It was the right thing to do at the right time, and thank the Lord it has turned out extremely well. But the fact of the matter is, other nations around the world will view that kind of activity with a lot more skepticism than the American public is today.
Let's go next to Barry. Barry with us from Paragold in Arizona.
Arkansas, actually.
Arkansas, excuse me.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Just a quick comment, and I've discussed this with several people over the past several years, that there was really no advantage to capturing Osama bin Laden or even killing him and making it publicly known, simply because we make him a martyr when we do that. This could have easily been done undercover and never publicized, and then bin Laden just sort of fades away. Does it seem that there's maybe some huge political gain to make this public knowledge, and maybe that's a mistake because bin Laden gets what he wants? He becomes a martyr.
Bob Woodward, I wondered if you might weigh in on this. Of course, difficult to disguise a helicopter mission deep into Pakistan and bombs going off in a city, and that was being live tweeted by somebody in the neighborhood. It's also, yes, there is enormous political advantage to the President of the United States to announce this. In the long run, might he, though, have been better off saying very little or nothing?
Here is the advantage of making it public. The theme here that President Obama and the military and the intelligence community is sending is there's no place to hide. And they are trying to say to all of al-Qaeda, in fact, as they are to the Taliban insurgency in Afghanistan, you're on the wrong side. It's not going to work. You're losing. The real big question now, they got bin Laden. If you follow the drone attacks, again, secretly conducted inside Pakistan for the last 2 years by Obama, very aggressively, they regularly kill the number three. The number two, Dr. Zarwahari, remains. And the team that worked on bin Laden, after they get done celebrating and high-fiving, now has to turn to Zarwahari. If they can capture or kill him, they have done something really significant, and it's called decapitation of not just number one, but number two, number three, and people down the line. If that happens, and you're a member of al-Qaeda, wherever it might be in the world, you're going to have to ask the question, is this the place to be? Is sense. And so it is inevitable that the White House would make this public. I think it's right that they make it public. If they didn't, somebody like Ted Koppel or somebody would find out about it and make it public and say, why was this done in secret? Why were we not told? And I think this is one
more,
of the...
More likely to be Bob Woodward, but let me just add not only my agreement with what Bob has said, but also let's remember that almost 10 years ago, 3,000 Americans were killed. It was entirely appropriate and apt that the architect of that act against the United States of America and against 3,000 civilians in this country, that he was brought to justice.
Let's go next to, this is Mike, and Mike with us from LeGrand in Oregon.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I woke up this morning. I hadn't heard the news last night. I was watching a DVD, and so I went to sleep without knowing this and woke up. NPR yesterday morning on your Sunday program had a piece on the growing rift between Pakistan and the U.S., and Pakistan specifically requesting or ordering us not to send drones in, getting the CIA out, et cetera, et cetera. I got pretty mad, and the reason I got mad was because that country, I believed at the time, was harboring the people that attacked our country. Black and white, that was it. I'm pretty liberal politically, but I'm a Henry Jackson defense guy, and I think that this was the right move. I would like to ask Mr. Koppel and whoever else might take this question, what are going to be the short-term and the long-term effects on our relationship with Pakistan, and do we have the right down the road to get al-Zawahiri and the other leaders of al-Qaeda who are hiding there? Thank you.
Look, you're asking exactly the right question, and that is what the impact is going to be on U.S.-Pakistani relations. Insofar as the Pakistani political leadership is concerned, I think they will swallow hard and try to maintain as amiable a public face as they can. Insofar as the Pakistani public is concerned, you've already got, and maybe Bob or someone else listening knows the numbers, I think it's over 75% disapproves, that is, of the Pakistani public, disapproves of the United States and its actions in the region. I think that's going to get much worse.
Ron Elving, let me just follow up on that. The United States also provides billions in aid to Pakistan, $10 billion, I think, over the last several years, and that is unpopular in Congress as well, as they look at a country with enormous suspicions of harboring America's enemies.
A number of crosswinds that the president has to try to navigate when he tries to decide what is the future of our relationship with Pakistan. Let's not forget the India part of that equation as well. They obviously monitor just as closely as Congress, more so really, just exactly how many F-16s, just exactly how many billions of dollars go to Pakistan. So this is perhaps our most volatile and difficult relationship in the world, and that's quite a league. You're talking about a lot of countries where we have difficult relationships looking forward. But when earlier, I believe, someone made reference to Tabala being just down the road from this particular town where Osama bin Laden was found, those nuclear weapons, this is a nuclear power which has teetered to some degree on the brink of being taken over by extraordinarily hostile forces, hostile to us, and we have had more anxiety perhaps about the Pakis' nuclear weapons than we have over those of the North Korea or some other countries in recent years. So there are many, many crosswinds.
And Bob Woodward, as we wind up this conversation, Pakistan's nuclear weapons are of enormous concern. So is Pakistan's geographical situation. Yes, right next to India, of course, but critical to support the war in Afghanistan. The president may decide to start winding that war down beginning in July. It's not going to be over in 6 months after that, or a year in 6 months after that. Pakistan will continue to be absolutely vital to U.S. interests.
Yes, exactly. And that's where all kinds of people, including the president himself, as he said last night, he talked to President Zardari of Pakistan about this, and they have to also make a diplomatic push to see if they can bring the Pakistanis into agreement on this. But what I think one of the important points in all of this has been a long war, as it was called, and it's gone on for 10 years. And what happens in wars, you get tested and you either rise to the occasion or you fade. And what the U.S. military and the intelligence people have done here is quite amazing. They could not locate bin Laden, and they waited for a moment for bin Laden to get complacent and make a mistake. And obviously the big mistake was hiding him away in this mansion, hide in plain sight, as they say. And in making that mistake, the United States was able to exploit it in a way that has great significance. There's no question about this. And watch the poll numbers for Obama. They're going to go up substantially, I would suspect. And you have a situation where the message that it sends to the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, to the people in Pakistan who've been resistant to what the U.S. is trying to do.
And I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Our apologies. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News.